Coming up on Golf Today, the newest LPGA winner, Leona Maguire of Ireland, hops on the program to talk about her first career win. Why was Saturday her day? And what is next? Jordan Spieth doing Spieth-like things along the cliffs at Pebble Beach, taking us on a literal roller coaster and giving us heart palpitations as he comes up just short at the AT&T. And there are great putts in golf, great walk-off wins, and great 18th-hole celebrations. But what Harold Varner III did in Saudi Arabia might top them all. Got to see it to believe it. And you can right here on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Live look at TPC Scottsdale's 16th hole. Used to be a sleepy little par 3. Now it is a party inside a party. Raucous, rowdy, riotous. Separates the WM Phoenix Open from all other spots on the PGA Tour. And Golf Channel will be here live all week long. Welcome to our perch above the 16th hole at TPC Scottsdale. Damon Ack alongside a senior writer at Golf Channel, Rex Harger, who's been covering this game for 25 years and change, but your first ever WM Phoenix Open.
It is. I'm excited to be here for all the reasons you just pointed out. You called it a sleepy little par 3. I don't think it's a sleepy little par 3.
Used to be.
The 51 weeks when we're not here. I can imagine okay. It's probably like this every week out of the year, but there's a vibe to this place. I mean, just being here, seeing people on a Monday morning, watching a pro-am, you can already start to feel it.
It hits different, as the kids say. How important is it that this event is different, that the PGA Tour has a stop that kind of zigs while everybody else zags?
And I think they embrace it. Most of the players that come here, they understand what this week is going to be like. They understand that you're going to get taunted on this tee when you show up here, especially on the weekend with everything that's going on. They understand that the crowd is going to be a little bit louder than what you'll find anywhere else on the PGA Tour, and they embrace it. I don't think they would want it for the rest of the PGA Tour schedule, but certainly this week, it's going to be a fun week. And I think most players who play here will tell you they look forward to this week.
The real question is, are we too old for this?
Yes.
We are.
But ask me again on Friday.
All right, we'll see how we hold up. It's never too old to celebrate a first-time winner, though, in this great game of golf. Leona Maguire able to get that done over the weekend. Her first win on the LPGA Tour. 5-under-67 is enough to get it done. Held off Lexi Thompson by 3 shots. In fact, Lexi shot 65, but it was Leona able to finish at 18 under. Decorated amateur career, ranked number one for 135 weeks, and now a winner on the LPGA Tour. As we bring in our own Paige McKenzie. Paige, it's a special weekend when there's a new winner on whatever tour you're talking about. We saw it on the PGA Tour with Tom Hoagie, LPGA Tour with Leona Maguire. Your thoughts on win number one?
It was a long time coming, and I loved listening to her after the round, and she talked about that. It was the first comment she made was, this is 17 years in the making. And I think for whatever winner that ends up in the winner's circle, sometimes it just feels like either it's coming out of nowhere or it's long anticipated. For her, it was long anticipated. This was a player that was one of the most anticipated amateur golfers coming into the professional ranks when she graduated from Duke University. A two-time NCAA Player of the Year, four-time All-American, and she had to take a little bit of the slow road. She ended up on the Epson Tour out of college and worked her way onto the LPGA Tour. Over the last 18 months, you got a chance to see her confidence literally grow with each event, with those Solheim Cup experience, and then into this Saturday, this final round Saturday, when you had Brittany Altomare get out to a hot start and then watching Leona stay patient. She had a 4-shot lead, tied with Marina Alex, but a 4-shot lead over Brittany and was one down after 6 holes. So then she lit fire and became the player that we expected her to be back in college. Incredible display of patience and ball striking was out of this world on that Saturday.
Paige, you were on the call on Saturday. What impressed you the most about her game? It seems to me you pointed out her ball striking, but she also made a lot of clutch putts.
She did. She made a lot of very nice putts. To me, there was a level of patience. It really looked like she was pretty comfortable in that situation. But going back to the ball striking, she had 81% of her greens this last week in those 3 days. Her strokes gained tee to green over the field was 11 and a half strokes. When you talk about putting on a ball striking clinic, that is what we saw. When you compared her a proximity, excuse me, from 150 to 175 yards, which for LPGA players, that's a mid-iron to long iron. She was 20 feet closer than the LPGA average. She was hitting it to 23 feet on average from that distance. She never allowed the door to be open, and I think that's what impressed me the most. She really didn't stumble. She had, like I said, some patience early on when other players were making a charge, but through the three quarters of the end of that round, she never allowed the door to be open. She slammed it shut and walked away with victory. It was pretty impressive to watch for a first-time winner.
Paige, one of the things Jerry Fultz said a couple of weeks ago was that it was premature to kind of crown this Nelly Korda, Jin Young Cole rivalry when you have the likes of Danielle Kang, Lydia Ko, and now Leona Maguire getting victories in 2022. What are your thoughts on that assessment?
They had separated themselves so much through 2021, through last season, that it was very easy to project that they were going to continue to separate themselves from the rest of the field. Nelly Korda has not got out of the gates the way that I'm sure she would have wanted to. So that certainly allows the opportunity for other players to make a charge. But I think the takeaway from the first three events on the LPGA schedule is we're in for a pretty great season when you're getting these kind of winners, players that we're familiar with that then go out and continue to impress us. And that's what we've seen so far this season.
Leona Maguire, a first-time winner on the LPGA Tour. Much more from Paige in just a little bit. And as you guys can imagine, a lot of reaction on social media. This from Niall Horan, pop star, singer, who signed Leona, by the way, to his management company. His reaction, yes, first Irish woman to win on the LPGA. Couldn't be prouder of you, Leona. Incredible performance. How about a major champion, Sofia Popov? 14 years ago, I played against Leona for the first time at the French Lady Juniors. She made me mark my ball from 120 yards out. I was deathly afraid of you back then, my friend. Just a matter of time until you were going to hold up some LPGA hardware. And Ireland's own Padraig Harrington, three-time major champ, saying, delighted for Leona. Nobody deserves it more. Years of hard work and pressure have gone into this win. Leona trailblazing away for all Irish golf. Delighted for Dermot Byrne on the bag as well. And late last year, by the way, I had a premonition about Leona in 2022. I'm going Leona Maguire.
Oh, I like that.
27-year-old Irish woman, just unbelievable player. We saw her in the Solheim Cup winning 4.5 points, a huge part of that victory for Europe. But she also shot 61 at Evian, the third person to do so, tying H.J. Kim did it, Jung Lee Six did it. She shot 62 at the Pelican LPGA. She had six top 10 finishes. This is someone who did almost everything except win. She was a rookie in 2020, but they didn't have the award, the Rolex Louis Suggs Rookie of the Year award because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So she actually finished second to Patty Tavitanikin in that from UCLA. So I think she had a fantastic year. She just looks like an absolute baller. The way she performed in the Solheim Cup to me, even beyond those great rounds in the 60s, was the biggest eye-opener to me. Former world number one in the amateur rankings. Fantastic career at Duke. I just think this is someone who will eventually be off the winners who didn't win list. She's going to win.
And that's exactly what she did over the weekend. Your biggest takeaway, I'm not going to pat myself on the back all day long, but I felt like I saw this coming. What did you see?
Nope. I'm spinning this on you. I'm turning it right back on you. Pat yourself on the back. Why? I know you just gave pretty good reasons right there, but tell me why you really thought she was going. Because at that point, she had won on the LPGA Tour, and you were talking about her in terms of world number one.
Yeah, the things that I saw last year, the maturity at the Solheim Cup, we spoke to her in advance of the European versus U.S. match, and I thought she was exceedingly mature. She's 27 years of age. She goes out and goes 4-0-1 in that Solheim Cup as a rookie in her debut, really becoming kind of the bell cow for that European team. She shot 61 at the Evian. She went completely crazy on that weekend in France. She just had the pedigree, 135 weeks as the number one ranked amateur. All the boxes in the amateur game and at college were checked. The only two-time winner of the Annika Award. And I also think the fact that she's a little bit older. She's 27 years of age, so she's not a 20-year-old or a 19-year-old. She just has a mature kind of way about her. And she's also a fantastic putter. Was 11th in putts per green last year. She's first in putts per green this year. So it's kind of a mental thing, an emotional thing, but also the production on the greens as well.
And I think that's a great point for the Solheim Cup because we see it on the men's side all the time. I think Victor Hovland is probably the best example going forward of what he learned from that Ryder Cup. Each one of those matches feels like a Sunday in contention. tension, and you get such a learning curve off of that. You learn what it feels like, how your body's going to react, how your swing is going to react under those type of situations. And for her to go 4-0-1 in her first Solheim Cup under that kind of pressure, I think that's a great indication of where she was going to go forward. But I will take the hat off to you.
Thank you, and I'll put it on right here. First two-time winner of the Annika Award, and then, of course, Maria Fassi did that as well. As you turn once again to Paige McKenzie, your thoughts on Leona in terms of us seeing this coming? Because it's one thing to say someone has all the talent in the world, but it's very, very hard to win out here.
It is. And I think the other thing that stood out to me in that that post-round interview right after she won is Jerry was asking kind of how she was feeling, how she was processing it. And the first thing she said was a feeling of relief. And I think when you look at a player that there was such anticipation, there was such expectation, to be able to perform under that kind of burden in that moment, to me, was impressive. The other thing is, looking forward, I'm curious to know, what does that mean for her? She no longer has that burden of proof. She doesn't have to validate the work that she put in her whole life. She doesn't have to play with any fear or doubt because she's already proven she can win. What does that mean for Leona? So I'm excited just looking forward, knowing that whatever burden she was carrying is gone now.
Yeah, the seal has been broken, as they say. She's now a winner on the LPGA Tour. And, you know, there's kind of the cliche that folks say that the floodgates are going to open, and that's not necessarily the case. We'll see where this career goes from here. But it was a very important win, not just for her, but also for the Republic of Ireland. And you mentioned Jerry Foltz, Paige. This was his reaction on social media. You guys see that little Guinness there in the corner on that table. The pizza looks fantastic, being selfless and all. I always try to privately honor each week's winner, you know, for the good of the game and all. I think Jerry's had a few beers in his day.
You know what? I'll give him props for the pizza. That's a very humble brag. Nice looking pizza there. He has never drank a Guinness in his life. That's a prop. He
didn't. That's just a prop?
That's just a prop. He only drinks one type of beer. I'm not going to plug it, but it's not Guinness.
All right. Looks like a pretty fun game rule as well. You got to love the pool table in the background. Well, when Golf Today returns, life-changing day for Leona McGuire. We look forward to speaking to her, her thoughts on win number one on the LPGA Tour.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And WinGrips, the best grips in golf. And Bushnell Golf and the New Wingman, crank up your game. And by Cobra LTDX Drivers, engineered for the longest total distance.
Back on Golf Today. Look at that smile. Final round 67 for Leona McGuire of Ireland at the Drive-On Championship. Crown Colony, Fort Myers, Florida, just outside of Naples for this decorated amateur. I want to talk about one of the best to come out of Duke. Two-time Annika Award winner. Shot that final round 61 at the Evian. 4-0-1 for Europe at the Solheim Cup in victory. And yes, that first player representing Ireland to win on the LPGA Tour. And speaking of Ireland, how about this from the president, Michael D. Higgins? Everybody paying attention. Congrats to Leona for her historic achievement in becoming the first Irish LPGA Tour winner at the Drive-On Championship. Another fantastic Irish sportswoman leading the way internationally. And we're joined by Leona McGuire on this Monday. Congratulations, first of all. I'm just curious, Leona, what's the coolest thing that's happened since your victory on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, the response has been a little overwhelming, messages coming from all over. But, yeah, I mean, you know you're doing something right when the president is tweeting at you, I guess.
Now, I know, I think it was your mother's birthday on Sunday. What was the conversation like after you had your victory?
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. I guess they were watching back home in Ireland. Dad was actually too nervous to watch, so he only watched 18 when he pretty much knew it was all over. But we had a lot of family and friends called by the house. It was mom's birthday, like you said, on Sunday. So I think they cut the cake a little early, and the celebration started a few hours earlier than it might have normally.
Well, you know, a lot of people called you the best player or among the best players on the LPGA Tour without a win. They said that they saw this coming. How aware were you of that chatter, and did you feel any pressure because of that chatter?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously been a point of conversation for a while. Obviously, when I graduated Duke and made my way up to this Metro Tour, and I think I came close a few times last year in Hawaii and at Meyer, and Lydia and Nelly played better. And then I think Solheim sort of reignited those sort of conversations again, and tried not to think about it too much. Obviously, we'd never had a winner from Ireland before, so a lot of people in Ireland really wanted to see that victory happen, and went off social media on Friday night, didn't look at it because I knew that would be a topic of conversation again. And I mean, just to try to stay as patient as I could, figured that if I kept knocking on the door, eventually it'd open. And thankfully, Saturday was the day.
You mentioned the Solheim Cup, and we talked about it earlier in the show. Was there anything from that experience where you had such a successful week that you were able to pull from on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that belief that my teammates had in me and Beanie and my partners, George and Mel, throughout that week, I think that was the big thing that week, that they probably believed in me more than I believed in myself. And I suppose believing that I was good enough to be able to hit those shots when I need to, hold those puck when I needed to. And obviously it's a little different doing it in an individual setting, but yeah, it's pretty special to get this first one done. And nice to have a lot of my Solheim Cup sort of teammates sending me messages and supporting me along the way, too.
So the president's tweeting at you, Patrick Harrington's tweeting at you. I know you don't have a crystal ball, but how do you think that your victory will affect the dreams of young people growing up in Ireland?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't long ago we didn't have an Irish person on the LPGA, let alone a winner. So, yeah, like I said, hopefully there's some little girls at home in Ireland that watched on TV last week, and figuring that if I can do it, why can't they do it? Obviously, it'll take a lot of hard work and some patience, but there's absolutely no reason why they can't do it too. And we've had a lot of success on the men's side, so hopefully we'll get a few more girls out here on the LPGA in the next few years.
When you went home last year after the Solheim Cup, there was a parade. You got to ride in a convertible around town. How's the city going to celebrate your victory?
I don't know. I don't think we'll maybe do quite as big as we did for the Solheim. It might be a little chilly in Ireland this time of year to ride around in a gold convertible BMW. But yeah, I think the celebrations are well and truly underway, and it's fantastic to see so many people taking joy from this as well, that they didn't get to see it there in person, but they got to sort of experience it with me. And I mean, Irish fans are the best fans in the world. Really feeling the love from home right now.
Leona, I'm always fascinated with kind of where winners go after they get it done for the first time. It looks like there's like a wine cellar behind you. I'm a bit of a wine snob. Like where are you at? It's a fantastic room that you're sitting in, wherever you happen to be.
I'm in the clubhouse in Lake Nona in Orlando. So, not my wine collection, unfortunately.
All right. But I did sniff out that wine. Lake Nona, a great spot. Great spot in Florida. Leona, it's great to spend some time with you. Congratulations on win number one. I imagine there'll be many more for you ahead. We hope to speak to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Leona McGuire, winner at the Drive On Championship in Florida. Speaking of winners, how about Jake? Jake Trout, Peter Jacobson, ambassador of the game of Pebble Beach, said farewell to one of his favorite spots on the planet. We go down memory lane with Jake next on Golf Today. Back on Golf Today, our good friend and colleague Peter Jacobson bid farewell to the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am over the weekend. Remember the human chain? Cypress Point, 1987, Jack Lemmon, Clint Eastwood, there's Jake, Greg Norman. I mean, you know, we're seeing a lot of dangerous shots at Pebble through the years, huh?
I think Jordan needed the human chain when he was hitting that shot on 8.
Did need a human chain. This, of course, 1995, the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Jake Trout is tied for 20th after two rounds before making a huge move over the weekend. Third round, 66, closing 65 for a two-shot win over David Duval. Double D loved himself some Pebble Beach as well. And this week, Jake returned with Fluff on the bag, possible swan song for those two. They took some great photos, kind of the before and after, the younger version and the vintage kind of like fine wine of Jake and Fluff. We've got Jake joining us on this Monday. It's great to see you, pal. First of all, what was the week like at Pebble? I know it's maybe your favorite place on the planet.
I appreciate, Damon, you saying vintage and not older version. I've said this so many times. The AT&T is the most important tournament we have on the PGA Tour because we, as players, have a chance to be inside the ropes with so many important sponsors that title sponsor these tournaments that we play in throughout the year. So for me to have been able to play last week, it was my first PGA Tour event in 1977 to start my career. And I wanted to end it at Pebble Beach, so I was so fortunate, thanks to Steve John and everybody involved, to allow me to play. I asked Bluff if Yurik had the week off, would he caddy for me, which he did. We had an absolute wonderful week. The weather was great, as I'm sure you all saw, but it was a wonderful way for me to end my competitive career.
Pete, you had 3 decades playing this golf tournament, and I'm sure you have so many memories, but the one that I read that I wanted to ask you specifically about, in 77, you qualify as a Monday qualifier, and you're playing a practice round, and you ran across who?
I ran across Arnold Palmer. I qualified in 77, Rex, jumped across the fairway at Monterey Peninsula trying to get a late practice round, and I cut in front of a group. I didn't know there was a group behind me. They were around the corner. They came around, and it was Arnold Palmer, of all people. And he walked right up to me, and he stuck his hand out and said, "Hey, I'm Arnold Palmer. Can we join you?" And it was pretty ironic. His partner with that week was Mark McCormick, who then became my manager, and I became so honored to be a great friend of Arnold's, as we all were, and competed alongside Arnold in many tournaments. But yeah, 6 decades of playing on the PGA Tour and at Pebble Beach is something I will never forget.
How about that? A great friendship was born, as you mentioned, between yourself and Arnold Palmer. Why did you two hit it off so well in your mind?
That's a good question. I've asked myself that many times. I one of the things Arnold loved, he didn't like to have his friends stand there and stare at him and, you know, do this to him. He was just a guy. And I probably gave him more crap than probably anybody on the planet. I stuck the needle into him as much as anybody. And Arnold loved to take the needle, and he loved to give it back. That's how guys say they love each other. Women say, "I love you." Guys say, I can't repeat that on the air, but they say stick it up the backside. So, and I think we did that. Arnold and I did that, and we just had a lot of fun.
Jake, you mentioned earlier that this is one of the most important events, or in your mind, the most important event on the PGA Tour. Can you just elaborate? Why do you think that is?
I think when we have a chance to play inside the ropes and partner with the title sponsors, the executive vice presidents, the marketing directors of all these fabulous corporations that allow these players, us players, to seek our fortune and fame on the PGA Tour through golf, I think it's an absolute must for all the players to play in the AT&T, because we have a chance to meet these important people who support our game. Now, I understand if you want to skip the week because you're tired or you've got a conflict. I get that. But I think that every player on the tour, when they get their schedule, should check the box and commit to the AT&T for those very reasons.
Jake, that said, are you concerned about the future of the AT&T, considering the dollars being thrown at some of the players to go play in Saudi Arabia?
I'm not concerned at all, Damon. I know that these players, I admire all of them, and I understand about getting appearance fees. I've done that myself, and I understand about releases, about how the pressure is on the commissioner to release these players. But I've got great faith in the players. I've got great faith in their advisors, their agents, their family and friends, and they understand where their bread is buttered. The PGA Tour is not going anywhere. I don't really think anything is going to happen with a rival tour. I think there will always be tournaments played opposite the PGA Tour events. I'm sorry, this week it was the Saudi event against the AT&T, but I don't think this is going anywhere. This is much ado about nothing. Players play because they want to win claret jugs and green jackets, and they want to be able to add to their legacy. If you just want to take the money and run, do it. Good luck to you. But I believe in the competitive spirit. That's why the Champions Tour is alive and thriving with players like Els and Goosen and Furyk and Darren Clark and Couples, because guys want to compete. They want to win. Money becomes a secondary issue. Guys want to win.
Jake, if we can go back to last week, if it is your swan song that Damon talked about, what's going to stand out? What are you going to remember the most from last week?
When I was a kid growing up in Portland, Oregon, Rex, my family, we drove down to Pebble Beach and played at the greatest resort in the world. And I still feel that same way. When I got on the tour and I had the chance to play so many years with celebrities like Lemon and Eastwood and Sean Connery and Chris O'Donnell and Huey Lewis, that was just the icing on the cake to be able to play the greatest course, my favorite course in the world, Pebble Beach, and then to play with the greatest actors, athletes, and celebrities and the musicians in the world. That was so special to me. So it's the greatest meeting of everybody that loves the game, from the world of business, sports, entertainment. And to be able to go and do that together with my fellow players, that to me is extremely special. I've been fortunate to win two majors on the Champions Tour, and I don't take anything away from that. I'm proud of that. But I think my greatest win was 95 at the AT&T, because it was so special and meant so much to me as a person and as a player.
Jake, the word ambassador gets thrown around quite a bit in this game, but I think it's very appropriate when it comes to you and your relationship with Pebble Beach and a representative of the PGA Tour and NBC in golf. Thanks so much for your time. It was fun watching you take a few divots out at Pebble, and we hope to speak to you soon, pal.
You got it. Thanks, guys. We'll see you soon.
There he is, Jake Trout, 7-time winner on the PGA Tour, and still to come, we kind of been alluding to him in a circuitous way. We're going to talk about him directly. Phil Mickelson, never been one to shy away from the press, and this weekend in Saudi had a lot to say. Plenty more with Rex coming up on Golf Today. Coming up on Golf Today, Phil Mickelson doubles down on comments regarding the PGA Tour and who controls the dollars and cents at the highest levels of the game. Does he have a point, or did he miss the mark? It's all ahead right here on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Another hour of Golf Today, TPC Scottsdale, 16th hole, famous par 3, designed by Tom Weisskopf and Jay Morsch, opened in 1986, quickly became one of the places to see and be seen when it comes to golf on the PGA Tour. As we welcome you to our perch beside the 16th hole, Damon Eck alongside Jaime Diaz now and Rex Hoggard. Now, this is Rex's first trip here to the Phoenix Open, not your first rodeo, my friend.
No, I've been coming here a long time, and it's always been so eventful. You know, even when it was small, it just seemed to have some drama. I remember when Tiger's Rock, for example, and Tiger's hole-in-one, that's still maybe the loudest sound ever in the history of golf. So many great things about it. I think of the 17th hole, that's the best short par 4 in the game, beautifully designed by Tom Weisskopf. Actually changed the game, I think, in terms of the way architects put together golf courses and what fans like to see and what players like to play. So a lot to, you know, recommend this place. Obviously, it's the place where more people watch golf than anywhere in the world in one week. It's that alone makes it historic.
One of the great spots in the Arizona desert. Right now, I'm going to shift our attention to a different desert, the Middle East. Of course, the Saudi International was the site of Harold Varner III's big win over the weekend. Very popular player who's kind of talked about the bumps and bruises and trying to figure out a way to close out golf tournaments. Played alongside Brooks Koepka in that PGA at Bethpage Black. That was a final round 69, and what a way to close out. A huge win for Harold Varner III. And we talk about a player, Carolinas, finishing birdie eagle to get it done. You mentioned that second career pro win, 142 worldwide starts between the wins, and all important, moving into the top 50, the official world golf ranking up to number 45, where all those goodies are available. So how about that Hyman, you think about Harold Varner III and the road he has traveled to this moment.
You know, it's been a complicated one. Obviously, he's one of the few African-American players out there, and I think that brings its own special pressure and, you know, wondering, you know, who I have to live up, what I have to live up to, and who's looking at me to come through. And I think he's learned that, you know, I just got to run my own race. But he's a very good iron player. You know, he's got that compact, strong body. You see guys like that who really kind of stamp out shots with a great repetition. He's really good at that. The short game's pretty good. Putter, everything else needs a little bit of work. But he's definitely, you know, on a path here of improvement. This has got to be a great, you know, encouraging moment. That's probably the longest winning putt I've ever seen. It reminded me a little of Constantino Rocca
at
95 at St. Andrews. That was the tie.
Right.
Just surprising, though.
Little Hal Irwin, maybe? I mean,
that was pretty big, but that was a playoff, too. But, yeah, Constantino was, he was dead in the water and did it. And Harold, not that he was dead in the water, but that was not, nobody's thinking about making that thing. And, you know, I hope that, you know, really puts him in a place where he feels tremendously confident now going forward.
It's fun to watch players, Rex, kind of take these steps forward. And sometimes it happens in stages. I remember speaking to Harold. He played a practice round with Tiger Woods several years ago at the Players' Championship. And I asked Harold about that, and he said that even gave him a little bit of confidence. And then he has that final round alongside Brooks Koepka. That's a moment as well at Bethpage. What have you seen in the progression of this player?
I remember 2 years ago we were at the first playoff event, and he did not play well enough to advance to the second playoff event. And I remember how angry he was. And normally we all know Harold. He's a very upbeat kind of guy. He's the kind of guy you want to be around. He's a positive type of person. But in that moment, he was so aggravated because he told me he felt like he had played so much better. He felt like he wanted his season to keep going. He's the guy that wants the ball in his hands, right? Mm-hmm. That's the athlete in him. And I think it's going to go to, okay, is he the best player? Not to win on the PGA Tour, which is sort of the silly sports radio conversation that we're all with. Going to end up having. But in this particular context, if you look at the strength of field, according to the world ranking of what he won on Sunday at Saudi International, it would have ranked better than 21 PGA Tour events last season. So you take the majors and the WGs out of the mix, and he was better than more than half of the PGA Tour schedule. I think this is a huge accomplishment for him.
And you mentioned being one of the few African-American golfers on the PGA Tour. A lot is asked of Harold. How do you think he handles kind of walking that line between just wanting to golf his ball but also being a representative in this game?
Yeah, I think at first he felt a little bit, you know, sheepish about it. Like, you know, I don't want to step out of it because I haven't done enough. And as he's done more, I think he's gotten a little more vocal. And I think he feels like, you know, it's part of his identity, and it's something to take inspiration from and something that he can inspire others with. So I think he's looking at it as a positive more than, you know, a weight.
Yeah.
And you know, he's 31 years old. He's matured. And each one of these successes makes him feel, I think, more comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah, important weekend for him, his first victory in the professional ranks since 2016 at the Australian PGA. And, Rex, you talk about the strength of field. Let's take a look at the leaderboard. Some notables here, major champs like Shane Lowry and Phil Mickelson, a past world number one in Lee Westwood, Olympic gold medalist in Xander Schauffele, Masters champion Sergio, Paul Casey, Mark Leishman, Tyrrell Hatton, Tony Finau, and Patrick Reed, just to name a few. And amidst the controversy surrounding this event, several top players met the media in Saudi earlier in the week, including Phil Mickelson, who was asked about the larger possibility of a Saudi-backed golf league. Mickelson said he appreciated the potential rival tour because of the leverage it gives to PGA Tour players. He said, quote, "My ultimate loyalty is to the game of golf and what it has given me. I am so appreciative of the life it has provided. I don't know what is going to happen. I don't know where things are headed, but I know I will be criticized, and that's not my concern. All that would do is dumb down one of the most intricate issues in sports. It would be so naive to not factor in all the complexities. The media rights are but a small fraction of everything else, and it is the tour's obnoxious greed that has really opened the door for opportunities elsewhere." And a four-time major champ, Brooks Koepka, went on social media saying, "Don't know if I'd be using the word greedy if I'm Phil." See a lot of back and forth that much in this game. When we do, Brooks Koepka is often in the middle, not afraid to take on Bryson DeChambeau, not afraid to take on Phil Mickelson in this case. What do you see in this ever-evolving story where Phil Mickelson is basically saying, you know, we don't make enough money on the PGA Tour. We don't control enough of where the money goes.
I think Phil likes to take things to the edge as far as having impact, as far as taking an argument in a public setting with confidence and saying, this is what's going on here, and I want to make a statement about it, and I want to move the needle. And I think he did that at the Ryder Cup for better or worse, he regrets what the way he treated Tom Watson in that press room. Mm-hmm. But many people say that the task force and the subsequent success of the Ryder Cup and the U.S. team wouldn't have happened without that motion. So I think he's been emboldened by those moments. But, you know, Phil's been wrong a lot, too. And, you know, even recently in the 48-inch driver, he was completely alone on criticizing that among the tour players. Some guys said, well, why, you know, mess up the fun of the game for people? But it's not for the average player, just for local rule. It's a local rule for pros. So that was misguided. And Phil was all over that in a way that I thought made him look, you know, uninformed. So in this case, he's a little bit uninformed, too, because these media rights, no other athletes that we know of in other sports share in their media rights this way. So this is sort of an unprecedented request that the PGA Tour is supposed to give in on. There's no question that the players have used the Saudi League, the potential Saudi League, as leverage. Phil's right about that, and more power to him. Get what you can get. But I think this is a bridge too far as just trying to kind of, you know, power through with this kind of half-baked idea. But that's Phil. You know, he doesn't mind putting himself there, and maybe it does move the needle. And I think every time Phil's been questioned and criticized, he's always bounced back because of his charm, his popularity.
Or winning.
And his, no question, Kiowa gave him slack. Mm. He can go out there now, and people are not going to criticize him the same way because he's held in such regard because of what he did. Mm.
I think that Teflon's going to get tested this time around, though. Because I'm only going to say that because this has become such a polarizing issue across golf. And I said it last week when he first made these comments, that he's not alone on this. There's plenty of players, as Jaime pointed out, that are going to use this opportunity of a rival league and use that leverage. And that's something that you're going to see in every other sport. And for the first time in the modern history of the PGA Tour, those players finally have leverage. Where he took it too far was with the obnoxious greed. You're absolutely right when it comes to the media rights part of this. And what I was taken by is, so Phil has been on the tour for 3 decades. Not once did he ever serve on the policy board and try to be part of this conversation, try to be part of the solution. Mm-hmm. So it seems rather disingenuous at this point in his career to turn around and start taking these types of shots.
And to say he's, you know, the PGA Tour, you know, controls too much of the media, the money. We only get 25%. I talked to a source who said,
no. It's a lot more.
It's 50% was previous, and now it's 55%. So you have that. There's a misinformation there. Mm-hmm. He's made $94 million. On the PGA Tour, has had a fantastic career and is fabulously wealthy. In this era of pandemic and people struggling, does he have a potential of losing some of the fans? He has legions of fans, but it just seems like there's a dissonant chord where he's talking about obnoxious greed, where he's been so wealthy.
Well, he talked about it moving out of California because the taxes were too high.
Yeah.
So he's always been concerned about what he considers to be his right to make as much as he can. But I think the bigger part of the legacy will come down to loyalty. You know, Tiger Woods has said, you know, I'm with the PGA Tour. That's where my future is. That's where my brand really is, my history is. What I'm most proud of is winning these tournaments. And if Phil were to walk away from the PGA Tour or lead others away from it, I think it would look disloyal in that regard because of everything that the tour has given him. I think it's fine to try to make the tour better for the players in whatever way you feel is right. But to actually leave would be a huge step, I think. And one that I think would actually damage his legacy.
Yeah, I was fascinated. You think this might stick because, you know, we're in a society where, you know, you scroll on your page and you're on to the next thing, the next story. And this is someone who hit a ball while it was moving in the U.S. Open, who's criticized the USGA and saying they have never gotten a U.S. Open course set up right unless it rains. I mean, he said that at Memorial. I was standing there and I was shocked. This moment right here, Shinnecock Hills, 2018. I mean, this... If somebody else does this, they're laughed out of the game, Jaime.
Yeah, and that's Phil's strength, is that he can recover from these things. Mm. You know, I mean, his social media is so endearing to a lot of people. I mean, he just charms people, and that combats this, I think, obnoxious side sometimes. Mm. I mean, to use that word.
And I agree to a huge extent that his fans are very, very loyal. Growing up, you were a Tiger person or a Phil person.
Sure.
The reason I think that's going to be tested is because this is such a polarizing issue that people are looking at these players, and no one has publicly come out and said they're going to play on the Super League. However, there have been plenty like Phil who have flirted with the idea, and it's becoming more and more of an issue, I think, among fans because of the reasons Jaime just pointed out. All he has done, his legacy, is based on what he's done on the PGA Tour. And I'll say this, as far as social media is concerned, and I think our colleague Eamon Lynch said it best, I don't know if he wants to get into a social media war with Brooks Koepka. I believe Eamon called it Brooks, it's a blood sport. I don't think he wants that.
Or in a social media contest with Eamon Lynch.
Yeah.
And that's about the human rights issue, which we're not talking about yet. But that's really, at bottom, sort of the elephant in the room. If guys start to actually go to this league and take the money, then they have to answer for that. So far, they can say, we're not politicians, we're just athletes. But at the minute they start making commitments, then that opens a whole area of real criticism that I think not just the golf world, but the whole world will chime in on. And that's something that Phil, I think, has to be careful of also.
We're mesmerized by genius talent, though. I feel like we're one more flop shot away, one more green jacket away from no one even talking about this. Phil Mickelson is one of those athletes that is so good at what he does that no matter what he says, a fireside chat, obnoxious greed quote, even if his numbers are wrong, he is such an uber talent, Jaime, that will overshadow anything in the long run. Or do you think that there is some jeopardy with some of his comments of late, and that his talent may not be able to obscure some of those things?
We say it, and it says a lot about the shallowness of maybe sports fans that, you know, winning takes care of everything. But not everything. You know, I mean, it all depends on the context. Muhammad Ali was not popular when he didn't go to the draft. And he was a winner, like an undefeated heavyweight champion. And yet the criticism came. Of course, it's totally different in terms of this culture and the social pressures on a black man in America. Mm. But at the same time, Phil is playing with something that's bigger than golf. It's worldwide. It's about diplomacy. It's about, worldwide ethics. And that hasn't come to the fore yet, I don't think, to its full extent. I think it will the moment somebody actually says, hey, I'm going there. I'm signing the contract. I'm committed.
Rex, I want to leave you with this. Are you surprised that Phil would take such a pretty strong shot at the PGA Tour, where he has been so successful and so popular, that he would really go kind of against the grain? I'm scrolling through social media. I'm looking for his allies. You know, where are the Zach Johnsons or the Matt Kuchars or his peers that are saying, I'm with you, Phil. I agree with what you're saying, because it seems right now that he's a man apart. He's a man alone in this instance.
Certainly not Brooks isn't going to be an ally, it seems, the way it's going to play out. And to your point, I would throw Aaron Rodgers' name out there, who's someone who had so much success and had a very popular fan base and ran afoul of that this season, for whatever the reasons may be. But I think Phil's always done this. So I guess my answer would be no, I'm not surprised. He's always been outspoken about the things he felt passionate about. Just 2 weeks ago at the American Express, he was holding court on the practice putting green about the ban on green reading material. So he has opinions, and he's not afraid of giving them.
And he may be speaking for others, as he did at the Ryder Cup. No one ever said anything about Tom Watson until Phil said anything.
Yeah.
And even when it happened, nobody said anything. So Phil, I think, kind of enjoys that role because he thinks he can handle it. But, you know, there's a great line about Phil, you know, that Randall Shambly said. Phil believes that he's smarter than the house. But the house always wins. And sometimes when you're arguing, when you've gone too far, you don't always know it if you have that gift that he has for the verbal, jousting. Yeah.
What will Phil do next has an entirely different meaning in the year 2022. Much more ahead on this Monday edition of Golf Today. Paige McKenzie returns talking about the kind of punctuation mark on the action we saw over the weekend from Saudi to Florida and everything in between. That's next on Golf Today.
Golf Today. Brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And Zexio. Experience light. Experience easy. Zexio, experience the difference. And Geico. You could save even more by bundling home and car insurance. And by Epson Tour. Road to the LPGA.
On Golf Today, news coming from the LPGA Tour. Earlier today, a familiar course was named the new host of the Cognizant Founders Cup in May. Upper Montclair Country Club in northern New Jersey returns to the LPGA Tour. Tillinghast Design has hosted several events across multiple tours, including the LPGA, PGA Tour, and PGA Tour Champions as well. And not only does Upper Montclair boast a long history across all tours, past winners of Who's Who, Arnold Palmer, Nancy Lopez, Pat Bradley, Lee Trevino, Raymond Floyd, and Lorena Ochoa, just to name a few. Time now, folks, for Paige's punctuation on the week. We're joined by our own Paige McKenzie. We're going to start with the question mark. Paige, what was your biggest question mark of the week?
I was left asking questions about Lexi Thompson and her health. More importantly, she was not 100% this last week. She talked about how the first round she pulled a back muscle, and we got a chance to see that in the final round where she flinched after a tee shot that she hit. She said, I would have had to have a broken back not to play, so I fought through it, took some painkillers, and just managed to get around the golf course. The good news for her is the LPGA schedule upcoming. They have a month off. She actually said she's going to take 6 weeks off, so it doesn't sound as though she's going to make the spring Asian swing. So she will have some time to heal. But the reason why it's a question mark is because I want to see more of Lexi. What we've seen so far in the two starts that she's made, we've seen a sixth place and a runner-up finish. This continues that incredible stretch whenever she gets to the state of Florida. I mentioned it 2 weeks ago before she made her debut on the season. She's made a ton of money there. Since the beginning of 2020, she's made 43% of her earnings in the state of Florida. She continued that good trend the last couple of weeks. So hopefully that question mark will go away with this 6 weeks off.
Paige, it was an eventful week. There's plenty for you to choose from. What's your quote of the week?
For me, this week, it was Leona Maguire. A lot of what happened on that Saturday was this huge momentum shift early. Brittany Altomare, who started four shots back, took a one-shot lead. They flipped back on the seventh hole. And to me, the shot of the day was the eighth hole. And Leona explained it after the round.
Tried to treat it a little bit like a fairway bunker shot. It was a little bit in between, and I kind of wanted to hit a little seven, just chip it sort of there. It was into the wind a little bit, and Dermot said, no, hit eight and hit it as hard as you can. Just try and get a good contact in it. Try and ride the wind a little bit, draw it in. And right before I hit it, he was like, clear your feet, make sure you don't slip. I slip by the best of times. So, yeah, that was definitely a good call for him. And, yeah, huge for memento. Just hit it as hard as I could. Just a really nice shot in there. Big for momentum, I think.
It was huge for momentum. It, to me, was a pivotal point in where that final round, what direction that final round would go. The fact that Leona answered Brittany Altomare, and then when she found herself in a little bit of trouble, was able to not only get out of it, but to continue that riding that positive momentum. It said a lot about her. I also enjoyed the sense of humor that she had talking about her foot movement, because if you've ever watched her play, she dances a little bit when she hits it sometimes. So pretty fun quote and description of what was a great shot.
Fantastic quote, and she held off a hard-charging Lexi Thompson to win for the first time on the LPGA Tour. All right, I got to take my time with this one. This is your oh bleep shot of the week.
Yeah, the last time I did an expletive shot, it was more of the reaction the player must have felt. For me, it was more of what I felt watching this, and it goes back to a shot we've seen a lot this weekend, and that is Jordan Spieth on the eighth hole at Pebble Beach. And again, I was thinking, oh my goodness, I'm a person that has been to the Grand Canyon. I refuse to walk anywhere near the edge. I cannot imagine trying to hit a shot off of that lie that close to the edge. So yes, that was my, oh
man,
shoot, shot of the week.
Mine too. Yours too, Rex?
Well, I have to follow up on that, though. Were you ever in a similar situation when you were playing that you stepped up to a shot and you decided, nope, not for me, I'm going to take a drop?
Thankfully, no. I was never that close to living on the edge in any circumstance as it relates to where my golf shots ended up.
Living on the edge. Great song, by the way. Living on the
edge. Very good song. Yeah. All right, as a writer, this is my favorite. I'm going to go with, what was your exclamation mark for the week?
I don't know if it's going to be any big surprise, because we, again, have seen this throughout the weekend, and that's Harold Varner and his celebration in Saudi Arabia. It's pretty fun to watch any player finish a tournament with what feels like an exclamation point. And in this situation, it was going to be a tough two-putt to even get into a playoff. But the fact that he was able to get it done and then able to celebrate, that's what you feel like, right? Is the emotion you expect and you hope for from a player. And then when he was asked about it after the round, every reporter is told, do not ask, how do you feel? Well, thankfully some reporter did, and he said, it feels like I won. I don't care who's, everyone showed up. I like winning. I think everyone likes winners. You want to gravitate towards winners. And today, I'm a winner, and it feels freaking awesome. To me, I loved every moment of that celebration as well as that post-round interview. And thankfully, that reporter went ahead and did what you're not supposed to do and asked, how does it feel?
That celebration was off the chain. The golf camera folks and the photographers loved that because he was jumping all around for like 30 seconds. So you had a lot of options to click your camera as many times as you wanted.
And you knew it was going to be like that because Harold is freaking awesome.
Yes, he is. Great stuff, as always, from Paige McKenzie, which leads us to some of the greatest kind of walk-off moments in the history of the game. 1983, Isao Aoki, Sony Open in Hawaii, becomes the first Japanese winner on the PGA Tour, Rex.
As I was watching this highlight this morning, I blanked trying to think of someone was sitting in the clubhouse.
Jack Renner.
Thank you very
yes.
much. Thinking there was going to be a playoff.
Yes, that's right. Instead, Isao holds out for an eagle. This is 1990 now, Bay Hill, 7-iron, 176 yards. Robert Gomez breaking Greg Norman's heart.
There is a plaque in the middle of that fairway that's still there, and it's much more than a 7-iron for me.
Absolutely. How about David Frost, 1990 Zurich Classic. He had a great sand game, by the way, and that was a great celebration. Again, Greg Norman is the victim in this one. All right, 2001, Bay Hill, Tiger Woods, y'all. Phil Mickelson was the victim here, and I think there was like a camera on Arnold Palmer. You could read his lips. I told you he'd make it.
I feel like this is going to continue to be a theme. 2008, again, Bay Hill, again, exact same result. Why would you expect anything else?
Yeah, this one beat Bart Bryant. Then 2009, you're like, he can't do it again, can he? Back-to-back champ. What'd I tell you? Oh. Just want to be in that scrum. Two of the greatest to ever do it. Jay Bird now, Jonathan Bird, 2010 Shriners. Fourth playoff hole. You remember this, Rex?
I do remember this, and I remember him talking about it afterwards. It was so dark. Again, the camera magic makes it not look dark, but he couldn't even see it go in.
Yeah, not quite a walk-off. He made the hole in one, but the other guys had a chance to match him. They did not. 2014 HSBC Women's Champions. Paula Creamer from 75 feet away.
When you consider that Harold was 20 more feet closer, I mean further away.
Remarkable. First title since that 2010 U.S. Women's Open. DJ FedEx already up by 4. You want to finish in style. How about winning by 6?
I was at that event. It felt like he was just picking on people at that point.
Sure was. How about maybe the ultimate walk-off? Suzanne Pedersen, 7-footer, to win her match and clinch the cup for Team Europe.
Don't know about the degree of difficulty for the putt. The celebration was worth the effort.
I love the hug with Marina Alex as well. Here's the third round of the WGC Dell match play. Sergio last year. That's pretty timely, pretty sporty.
I think it's such a demanding hole is what people don't realize when it comes to that particular golf course.
Yeah, that was fantastic from El Nino. Well, it's not all about the winners on a Monday. Coming up, we dive into our winners who didn't win this past week in the great game of golf.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on Golf Today, we take a look at the final leaderboard at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, Pebble Beach, California. Tom Hoagie gets his first career win in his 203rd start, holding off three-time major champion Jordan Spieth, of course, won at Pebble back in 2017. You see Bo Hostler, what a week he had. Patrick Cantlay with a start to his 2022, which leads us to the winners who didn't win this past week in golf. Rex, do you have a thought on who was a winner who didn't actually kind of bring home the hardware?
This was easy for me. Sometimes I struggle with this, but I was going with Bubba Watson for a bunch of different reasons. First and foremost, his play at the Saudi International. If you look at what he had not done, he hadn't played an individual stroke play event since last August, played in a couple team events, but he really took time off and he got rested. He said both physically and mentally. And I think we've all come to appreciate Bubba's honesty when it comes to the mental problems that he's had to deal with throughout his career. But having this extended break, I think, was one of the things that really helped him going into the new season. You remember, of course, he released a book last
year.
Where he talked about it. And we saw it last year at the U.S. Open when Matthew Wolf had an opportunity to speak publicly about the things that he's struggling with. I almost think it's an epiphany for someone in that situation where it frees them up to go out and perform like they know they can. And that's what Bubba did last week. He performed like he knew he can. came up short, runner-up against Harold Varner, who, of course, the walk-off that we've talked about all show. But then he walked back up to the 18th green and was part of that celebration. It was almost as important to Bubba to be there for Harold as it would be if he had won the event.
Such a great point. I think he did unburden himself by writing the book, by trying to help Matt Wolf and kind of be a voice for some of those players. And obviously he's someone who's still so long off the tee that even into his 40s, much like a Phil Mickelson, I imagine can still factor out at the highest levels of the game.
I think so. When you look at how well he's played here,
PC
Scottsdale, he's one of eight players who's going to make the transition from the Saudi International to here. And then, of course, next week at Riviera, where he's a multiple-time winner. His game travels, and I think he's at the part of the season where he has the opportunity to do special things. We've seen it from Bubba in the past. Once he gets going, he can end up on a roll.
All right, you go Bubba, I go Bo. From Bubba to Bo. Bo Hostler, who finished third at Pebble. He has three top three finishes now in his PGA Tour career. He finished runner-up in 2018 at the Travelers and Houston as well. And this was someone who was a very decorated amateur, you recall. He was a junior Ryder Cupper and a Palmer Cup member and a Walker Cup member as well. He briefly led at the U.S. Open in 2012 at the Olympic Club as an amateur. He went to the University of Texas and kind of has lost his card a couple of times. Had to go back to Korn Ferry Tour to get his card back. He seems to be finding his feet. He looks in fantastic shape. I think he's someone who looks very, very focused. And though he didn't win at Pebble, he had a really rough start on Sunday. He found his footing and really made a nice push to the end. Ended up bogeying the 18th hole. But I tell you what, he was there in the frame for a long, long time with Hoagie and Spieth.
He was there in the frame for a long, long time. And I'll go back 2 weeks to Luke List, and I compare these players very favorably. In as much as both of them had so much expectations on them when they turned pro. They really, really were expected to come out immediately on the PGA Tour and immediately win. We now know, watching Luke List's career, it took him a while to get there. My guess is it's going to take Bo a little while to get there, but putting himself into a situation like this, and I don't know what you saw on Sunday at Pebble, but I saw a guy who was comfortable with the situation. Didn't make all the putts he needed to, but he was comfortable in that situation.
Yeah, I saw someone that was trying to get after it, someone who looked very, very comfortable, who was focused, had the bit between the teeth, and someone I think will be a young person who eventually breaks through for his first PGA Tour victory.